You'll find engaging illustrations, colorful layouts, and helpful charts in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition.
Because they really do truly care more about abortion than actually having the Democratic Party win.
This was not a good faith effort to get someone to bake a cake that meant a lot to him. He was trolling Jack Phillips. And you know who's trolling Jack Phillips now also? The state of Colorado.
It violates the narrative that the mainstream media has chosen, which is the only way you can ever write about homosexuality is with gays as victims of oppression.
It is a horrendous act of pastoral malpractice to deprive the congregation of the content of the Small Catechism.
Confessional Lutheran missionary campus pastors love Issues Etc.
The word, I think, roughly means the study of man, and that's a big, big subject you undertake to study man. What about man are you going to study? His culture, his history, his way of thinking. You could look at him also in terms of his biology. And all of this falls under that broad umbrella that's called anthropology. Of course, if you get your view of man wrong, or if you have presuppositions built into your study of man that are incorrect, you might end up with incorrect conclusions. And there's no doubt that both evolution and multiculturalism have an influence in the study of anthropology. Can someone pursue this broad subject as a Christian with a Christian worldview and keep that intact? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, August 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's part 8 of our series on classroom apologetics. Today it'll be Anthropology 101. Dr. Ned Farley will be our guest. We'll spend some time with Pastor Paul McCain in our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We'll be looking at Luther's Small Catechism, the Third and the Fourth Commandments, bridging over from the first to the second table of the commandments. And then it's Friday. That means we'll be playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We've got four sound bites ready to play for you. And after we've played them in the last half hour of the program, you'll give us a call 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email with your vote, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or you can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in the last half hour of the program. In the meantime, it's time for part 8 of our series on classroom apologetics. Today, we'll get into the anthropology classroom. Dr. Ned Farley joins us. He's Associate Professor of Anthropology at Wisconsin Lutheran College. Dr. Farley, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd, for letting me speak with you. This is an important subject and something that I deal with on a daily basis, so it's good we're talking.
What issue does the subject of anthropology address?
Anthropology is a pretty broad academic discipline, and it's for that very reason. So what an anthropologist does is he or she is looking at the relationship that exists between human biology and culture. And we frame this within a historic and prehistoric perspective. So we take a look at how that relationship between the behaviors that we share, that we learn, that we transmit through socialization to our children, how those relationships and their function in the society, how that has changed over time.
So what are the various branches of anthropology?
So to get at that very broad subject, we break the discipline down into four major branches. And some of them will be familiar with to you and to your listeners. Others will be a little bit more marginalized. But basically what we're doing is we're breaking down that relationship into four kind of chunks. So we have a branch of research that looks at human language. We have a branch that looks at living culture and historical cultures. We have a branch that looks at archaeology, or is called archaeology, in this case looking at the history, the prehistory of culture, And then we have the fourth and final branch, which is biological anthropology, and that's where we find things like forensic science kind of housed, or when students are interested in things like criminal justice. That's where that begins to be discussed.
So where do you think, in those four disciplines, the greatest challenge to the Christian worldview is mounted in the subject of anthropology and in the anthropology classroom?
Right. The last branch is probably the hardest one for many of our young people to grapple with, because it's in that fourth branch, that biological branch, that we take a look at human biology and culture and how they vary, but we look at it through an evolutionary window, or we look at it through evolutionary biology, or the lens of evolutionary biology. And that's kind of standard to the discipline. That's one of those curricular pieces that we, as an anthropologist teaching the discipline, have to touch upon. But what's nice about working within a Christian environment is I can challenge students, and really it's through apologetics that I'm able to do this, I can challenge students to think critically about every aspect of the information that's being presented to them.
What would you say is the popular or the common approach to anthropology at the college or the university level?
Anthropologists are all about hands-on, especially when you're looking at a branch of research like archaeology, and that's the branch that I was kind of raised up in, even though my academic background really is more of a general anthropological study. But with archaeology, you can teach what particular sites were discovered. You can talk a little bit about the archaeologists that worked on those sites. You can talk about the artifacts, their distribution, how they were interpreted. But you really can't get to the amazing science of archaeology without that kind of hands-on component. Students need to see the methods and techniques that we use in the field to be able to gather data in a scientific way, and then to analyze that data in the lab. And so generally we will get students out into the field, and being a small program, we can do that. We're not having to send, 150 students out into the field. We have 20, 30 students at a time that we bring out to the field. But they're able to get a kind of a hands-on experience like that to have a much deeper understanding of the methods that an archaeologist will use. The other branch that really requires that almost field experience is the cultural branch. The wonderful blessing that we have had here at Wisconsin Lutheran College is that we are connected to a ministry that is global and one that reaches out to the many parts of the world. And we can tap into that network, and we can send students to Africa, we can send students to China, we can send students to the Caribbean, and we can have them experience cultures that are very different from their own, and they can then slowly and methodically understand those cultures through that ethnographic lens, where you're studying the relationships in the home, or you're studying practices of trade, or you're studying religion. So those are really the two branches of research that seem to be most hands-on of the bunch.
To what degree, and given what you've said so far, sounds like it is to a great degree, at least in the branch of biological anthropology, to what degree does the theory of evolution influence how anthropology is taught today?
Well, all you have to do is pick up a textbook from any college environment, Anthropology 100, Anthropology 101, Anthropology 102, whatever the number that they are assigning to that curriculum, and flip through the table of contents, and what you'll see is that if it is the physical or biological branch that's being taught, the science of evolution, human genetics, forces of evolution, even how we classify and taxonomically label the biodiversity of the planet, all of that is introduced immediately. And the reason for that is because of the perspective that the discipline of anthropology takes when it comes to the history of humanity. The idea that if you go back far enough in time that human beings have a shared pattern of descent, or they have common descent with other forms within, in this case, the biodiversity of the planet today. And those most closely related to humans, and again, nothing that I'm personally believing, but generally what is taught is that primates, the living primates today, have the chronologically closest relationship with human beings in our growth and development over time. Even before we can give fossil forms the label human. So that's a challenging one. And I think it's good for students to attend a university setting where they are allowed to think very critically about that. I would say if you're a good instructor at any college level environment, you would always challenge your students to think critically about what they are learning and to struggle to wrestle with that, in a sense.
In the secular anthropology classroom, it sounds as though they are probably not going to be encouraged to question the assumptions of evolutionary theory. They're going to be asked to make it the foundation or the framework for their study of man.
I can't speak on behalf of all of the secular classrooms across the continental United States, but I can tell you that there is some truth to what you're saying. The curriculum as it's presented, and many of my colleagues who work in those settings kind of follow this format, is really just getting students through that material so that then they can think more broadly about things like human disease, or they can think more broadly about topics such as human ecology, or they can think more broadly about the various discoveries that have been made in the 20th century that relate to forms, castes, ultimately, natural castes of one-time biological material that we, based upon the appearance of that material, fit into our overall understanding of human biology over time. So they kind of go rapidly through that. They don't necessarily have time to challenge students to read outside of the textbook. And students don't always have that time, you know, in their own studies to be able to look at apologetic texts and compare and contrast what authors are saying to those resources. But a good student will think about things in a very holistic manner. A student will take a look at, for example, sample size when you're talking about a population that's now only known based upon fossilized material, and they'll say, you know, how can you reach those conclusions with such small samples? That's a very basic example, but it is a starting point for many of our students as they're kind of rapidly going through this material and being tested on it. But I'll tell you right now, students, and I've also taught in a secular format as well, students with strong Christ-centered backgrounds will fall into two camps. Some students will look at their studies as mutually exclusive from their worldview. That would be the label you would apply to me. I wanted to be an archaeologist. This was the material I had to get through to get to that career, and by golly, I was going to do it. But then there are other students that will look at everything that they are learning about as a potential threat sometimes to their religious worldview. So I've had students, even when I've taught at other campuses, come up to me, you know, even with tears in their eyes, and they say to me, I don't know if I can study this. And I have to sit down and usually speak with them and say, listen, you're looking at this as fact that is unchanging. You're looking at it through the lens of truth, as opposed to looking at it through the lens of discovery and the lens of science. And what I always challenge them to do is to go back and find textbooks from the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, and look at how this material is being presented and how much of it has changed. Even some of the base principles that we assign to things like the age of the planet have changed over time. And so if changeability is such a central piece to that secular environment, then you have to take it or look at it for what it is that it is something that 10 years from now may be drastically changed in terms of how we explain the world around us and its past. Whereas the truth of your worldview, of your Christ-centered worldview, is outside of time. 4,000 years from now, the message of our salvation will be the same. And so that's usually what I do to initially challenge students to take time and to frame things in relation to what they really are.
So in other words, in kind of common parlance, you're simply saying, don't get too worked up about how this right now conflicts with your worldview, because the quote-unquote, the scientific conclusions on these things are likely to change.
Exactly.
And yeah, there'll be another challenge to challenge your worldview there, so don't get too bogged down on that.
Exactly, because it's the material is giving you a student a foundation for understanding their own research. But I can tell you, having done plenty of research in my tenure, both here at the college and then in my time in my own studies, is that these principles, these ideas, are really not well represented in what we study. I love to study prehistoric diets. I really don't deal with the timeline associated with a fossil form like Homo erectus or Homo neanderthalensis when I'm looking at the biochemistry of our gut and how it functions. But I might compare our physiology to another complex mammal, in this case, to better understand how that functions. If you look at the history of animal testing, and it's had very good periods to the history and then very dark periods to the history, but if you look at it just generally, you realize that things like animal testing have helped us to understand something about the biochemistry of our environment, things that are potentially hazardous to humans. But we can still, in a comparative framework, do that. We can take a look at how, for example, a complex primate deals with stress when they're in a zoological environment. And then we can compare that to how a young person, maybe starting school for the first time, walking into that classroom the first day, how their body will react to that level of stress as they're starting their schooling. So it's, again, not acknowledging that there's any particular confirmed common ancestry there. It's just two complex organisms and how they are reacting to something like stress.
It's part 8 of our series on classroom apologetics today. We're in Anthropology 101. Dr. Ned Farley, Associate Professor of Anthropology at Wisconsin Lutheran College, is our guest. When we come back, what view of man does evolution then put forward?
Let's examine the response of our Christian community to the cultural turmoil regarding sexuality and children.
Licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Beverly Yonke talking about her presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In 50 years, we've spiked to what is now a cultural crisis from what was a nearly non-existent issue. We can wring our hands, remain unacquainted with the facts, or simply remain silent and avoid the unpleasantries. Biblical sexuality and God's created order aren't polling well these days, while media talking heads gush about the joys and justice of violating natural law.
You can meet and hear Dr. Beverly Yonke making the case for a Christian response to the transgender child at Issues Etc.'s Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
It's basically the trick is this. It's that if we can't explain something divine, it's not real. And if we can explain it, therefore it's not divine.
That's a lot of money per person, and when you multiply that by the tens of millions of people who presumably would have been born or might have been born had it not been for Roe versus Wade, you're talking tens of trillions of dollars in national wealth that simply never got created.
But the problem for us is the Mormon Church denies or distorts a lot of these basic teachings that have always made Christians what they are.
The sole infallible norm of all things is Scripture itself. Why? Because Scripture itself is the voice of God, whereas tradition doesn't occupy that exact same kind of role within the church.
In the next hour of Issues Etc., we're going to be playing Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Those are just a sampling of the four soundbites we'll be playing for you in their entirety in the next hour of the program. In the meantime, Dr. Ned Farley is our guest. It's part 8 of our series on classroom apologetics today, Anthropology 101. He's Associate Professor of Anthropology at Wisconsin Lutheran College. Dr. Farley, what view of man, then, does evolution put forward?
Well, as you and your listeners know, when you're talking about nearly every discipline across the university landscape, man is, or humanity is, at the center of everything that we measure, everything that we do, and very often the reason that we do what we do in terms of our research. The freedom of working in a Christian university setting or attending a Christian university or college is that you can look at humankind with its diversity, with its ingenuity, with its technologies, through the lens of a master plan, through the lens of the beauty of God's creation. And so many of our students, when they're looking at growth and development, how an individual grows over time and very important periods in that growth and development process, when they see how little wiggling room that we actually have for any of those mechanisms or processes to change without, you know, in this case, a resulting life or death scenario, they are amazed. Or when they look at the biochemical nature of the atmosphere and how amazingly balanced it is, but how chaotic it is in terms of kind of an over time perspective, and how that even in that chaos, that ensures life on the planet, how much of God you can see in that amazing natural landscape. So being able to have students put Christ at the center of their studies and then observe humankind from that kind of centerpiece, that's a real freedom, and that's something I think that a lot of our students enjoy.
To what degree does multiculturalism, that ideology, influence how anthropology is taught nowadays?
You know, this is one area that I think if you were to speak to any working anthropologist on the face of the planet, you and your listeners would be happy with. Multiculturalism, as you know, has been abducted by politics. And it has become an area where people from a wide variety of backgrounds and wide variety of perspectives have used or leveraged it to be able, in a sense, accomplish their own agendas. But in terms of the discipline, multiculturalism is something that really is a natural part of human society. It's a natural part of global human life, that we have many languages, that we have many perspectives regarding things like religion and things like language and things like, in this case, technology. Definitions of things such as what a family is, that varies from one region of the planet to the next. And so students are able to reframe the subject of multiculturalism in a less political way in the college classroom and, of course, in their own fieldwork. When they are collecting information on how children, for example, who live in the Papuan subcontinent, how they learn basic bits of knowledge or how they have acquired their language, those kinds of things we do examine through a multicultural lens because we compare, in this case, cultures from a wide variety of watersheds and global environments. And so we've taken kind of the politics out of that subject, and we've allowed ourselves as anthropologists to appreciate diversity, to study diversity, and then to, as Christians, act upon that in a sense, or relate to people who have different languages, different traditions.
In the worst of cases, as you mentioned, it's been hijacked, multiculturalism. What view of human society does that hijacked version put forward?
Well, ironically, it puts forward a perspective of society that is a little bit elitist, and I would say a little bit old-fashioned if you're to take a look at how, for example, European societies have framed or understood people from a variety of colonial and post-colonial global environments. When you strip away the politics of multiculturalism, when you take away its agenda, you realize that people who are hunters or gatherers, or people who are small-scale agriculturalists, or people who have an economy that is rooted in pastoralism and herds, and they travel from one geographic region to the next, bringing their herds with them, that these societies are actually adapted or are connected in a almost ideal way with their environment. That's the perspective that we take, and we don't necessarily romanticize that way of life. We don't say, well, that's how all of us should be living. We realize that in the industrialized West, that our practices with regard to things like taxation or the industrialization of food, that these are things that best fit how we live. So we don't look through a judgmental lens. We don't romanticize societies, and we don't judge how we live, in a sense. And in doing that, we kind of draw out all of those kind of political agendas, both for the extreme kind of left and extreme right when it comes to a topic like multiculturalism.
What other challenges to a biblical worldview would anthropology students encounter in the classroom?
I think you have hit the nail on the head when you were talking about the role that evolutionary biology plays in the kind of basic curriculum of many of the courses that an undergraduate student will take as they're just starting to familiarize themselves with the work of anthropologists. And I think that is something that we have to be concerned about, but it is something that, unfortunately, by the nature of the curriculum, will never disappear. It is part of that study. However, if a student comes to a university environment with a strong relationship with the Lord, or they attend a university environment, as I said before, where they're being challenged to think more critically about things that are unfortunately called facts, which, again, fact and truth, as your listeners know, are things that scientists, if they're being good scientists, don't jump to. So if you have students thinking critically about that and using all of the different coursework that they've been exposed to and all of the different gifts and talents that God has given them, things like mathematics and history, and apply that to what they're being exposed to, then I think you'll find that individuals will be able to hold things mutually exclusive. And as I said before, they'll be able to frame it in a very healthy way. They'll be able to say, well, this is currently what the field of biology, the study of evolutionary biology, in a sense, holds to be the processes, the mechanisms that were at work to explain what we see today. However, that will change. But my understanding of why I do the things that I do, why I have chosen a career in medicine, why I have chosen a career in archaeology, why I have chosen a career in teaching, that is something that is outside of that. That is something that is a path, a plan that was set before I was even born. It was a plan that God had for my life. And if a student can do that, they'll never have a problem. I came to know the Lord in a deep spiritual way just before I started college. And the Lord had a purpose for that, because he said, okay, I'm going to put you into this discipline, and I'm going to have you thrive in this discipline, one that seems to be diametrically opposed to everything that we understand to be the truth with regard to things like creation. But I'm going to have you flourish in that for a reason, because I'm going to ask something of you at the end of that process. And I always knew that to be the case. And so when I got my PhD, I gave it to him. I said, I laid it on the altar and said, Lord, this is yours. Now allow me to glorify you through it. And I think that, you know, I was exposed to a wide variety of perspectives. I was actually in college at a time when Marxist ideologies were very, very strong in virtually every discipline that was being taught. And it never shook my worldview because Christ was at the center of it. And so if students approach that, and parents as well, if they look at their student, they say, you know what, Christ is in your heart, and I'm confident that no matter what you learn, no matter what you study, you'll always know what the truth truly is. If a parent can feel that, and if a student can say that, I think they'll have no problems in any of their studies, whether it be psychology, mathematics, anthropology, you name it.
So it sounds like there is a place for a biblical worldview of man in anthropology, even in the somewhat hostile environment of academia today.
Very much so. You could go to any classroom on the planet, and if you look at expressive culture or art from an African population living in a watershed, and you look at that and you say, look at what human beings can do. Look at how beautiful that carving is. Or look at how the artist framed the landscape. Or if you can take a look at the cave paintings at Lascaux and you can look at the beauty of that and how they used those cave paintings to be able to organize their environment in much the same way that science organizes our environment, or is at least one thing that organizes our environment today, that they use those paintings, that expressive culture, to be able to do that, you can see how unique, how beautiful we are as the crown of God's creation, and how there is nothing like us on the face of the planet. And you can see that in a secular classroom, and you can see that in a classroom in a college setting that is Christ-centered as well. But Christ has to be part of that equation. You have to look at everything you study as a college student through your Christian lens. And if you do that, you will see Christ everywhere, everything fulfilling the plan that he has for his creation.
When we come back, we'll conclude our conversation with Dr. Ned Farley, Associate Professor of Anthropology at Wisconsin Lutheran College, on Anthropology 101, part of our series on classroom apologetics. Then we'll talk with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House about the third and fourth commandments in Luther's Small Catechism.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
Confessional, liturgical, sacramental. Lutheran Church of the Redeemer is located in Columbus, Georgia, right next to Fort Benning, Georgia, off of Exit 7 on I-185. Come receive our Lord Jesus' gifts of forgiveness and grace every Sunday in the Divine Service. For more information, visit our website, RedeemerColumbusGA.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
The Lutheran Public Radio Choir with A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. It's one of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns, and we'll send you a CD or a thumb drive of these hymns for a tax-deductible gift of $100 or more to support this worldwide outreach. You can donate online. Just click the CD label at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please be sure to write hymn CD or hymn thumb drive on the memo line of your check. Part 8 of our series on classroom apologetics today, Anthropology 101. Dr. Ned Farley is our guest. He's Associate Professor of Anthropology at Wisconsin Lutheran College. So to round this off, Dr. Farley, why is a biblical view of man superior in the study of anthropology?
Well, I'll give you a working example. I have students, and it's really increased over the last 5 years, I have students coming to my department who are interested in forensics. And forensic science is a very important part of the medical legal system that we have, really globally now. It's part of how we give a voice to victims who are no longer able to speak for themselves. And as part of that process, students will have an internship at the medical examiner's office, and they will be exposed to some pretty challenging events. They will visit crime scenes. They will stand alongside investigators who are talking to next of kin. They will be standing tableside at autopsies. And what I find, and I've had students who've come to our campus who don't have a Christian worldview or a biblical worldview, and then I've had students who come to our campus who do. And I've had both of those students in that environment. What I find that students who have a biblical worldview, when they look at those remains, when they frame that tragic event, when they take a look at the suffering of the next of kin, they frame it in a Christian way. They realize, for example, that those remains are something that we should respect, but they're also, in a sense, a hollow clay jar, that the soul is no longer there, and that God is in control. And when they look at the suffering that we all go through, they're able to think about Christ on the cross and the suffering Father, in a sense, when he looks at his Son who's taking upon his shoulders the sins of all humankind. They're able to, in a sense, have a much, I don't want to say more detached perspective, but one that's maybe a safer perspective when they are put into an environment where people who didn't have that perspective would be very emotionally challenged. So it's almost as similar to the armor of God that we put on a daily basis, right? We're protecting ourselves with the knowledge of the truth. And when students bring that to these settings, they're able to really address some pretty challenging subjects, even things that are staring them back in the face in these environments. So I think that's a good example for how a biblical worldview, in a sense, will keep us safe, and that we should hold on to that and maintain that worldview.
Finally, then, what would you say to a young college student who is fascinated by the broadness of the subject of anthropology and says, I would really like to study that, I would really like to, but I'm afraid that as a Christian, it's going to rob me of my faith if I go in there and learn all the things even if I try to hold them at arm's length as, you know, the mirror frameworks that are popular nowadays, what would you say to such a student?
Well, the first thing I would tell them, and I've had students and parents voice that same concern, and what I always tell them is that, first and foremost, by you voicing that concern tells me that you are ready for this journey. You know exactly who is in control. You know exactly where your heart is. And you know how dangerous the world is, not just in an academic sense, but the world itself is always, and everything that's going on around you is always trying to pull you away from that faith. But then what I also mention to students, because they need kind of the working tools for that process, is to really, before they start to study this subject or any related subject, is to delve deeply into what science is and how it functions and why it is, in a sense, an important means of explaining the world around us, and hold science to its own principles, to its own values, that we have to observe things, that we have to be able to measure those things, that there are criteria for both the observation and the measurement, that we have to be able to test and retest those and get the same results, and then eventually we get to the point where we can use those results to explain a phenomenon. Make sure to hold everything that you are being exposed to in the classroom to that level, and your faith will never be challenged, because you'll know what truth is, and that the concept of truth, and this is actually, and it sounds oxymoronic, but this is kind of the blessing of postmodernism, is that the postmodernist will tell you that he or she in what they're presenting to you will never attain the level of truth because it's too changeable. But you bring absolute truth with you, and you understand that the scientific principles that you read today, as I said before, will change. They may change within a month, but the absolute truth that you know to be truth will never change, and that these concepts that you're being exposed to are only a means to an end. They're just getting you to the career that the Lord has set before you, to work as a forensic technician, to work as an archaeologist, to work as a linguist, to work as an ethnographer, to work as a missionary. It's just a means to an end. And if you frame it that way, taking into consideration all of that, you'll do just fine.
Dr. Ned Farley is Associate Professor of Anthropology at Wisconsin Lutheran College. Dr. Farley, thank you very much for being our guest.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, and I will keep you in my thoughts and prayers. And Todd, what you're doing and what your staff is doing is so very important. Don't stop. I pray that the Lord continues to support your ministry, and it's been a real blessing to be able to talk with you.
When we come back from this break, Pastor Paul McCain will join us for the continuation of our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We're in Luther's Small Catechism. We'll get to the Third and Fourth Commandments. Stay tuned.
Some Bible passages make us more uncomfortable than others. Take, for example, any passage about money. But just because a topic makes us uncomfortable doesn't mean we shouldn't face it head on. That's exactly what the August issue of the Lutheran Witness has done, with articles on poverty, generosity, money management, and more. You won't want to miss it. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During August, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Lutheran Education Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Grace Lutheran, Henderson, Nevada. Faith Lutheran, Orange City, Iowa. Bethany Lutheran, Fairview Heights, Illinois. Bethlehem Lutheran, North Zulch, Texas. Risen Christ Lutheran, Arvada, Colorado. Trinity Lutheran and Grace Lutheran, Wichita, Kansas. Emmanuel Lutheran, Perryville, Missouri. Risen Savior Lutheran, Basor, Kansas. St. John Lutheran, Champaign, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Auburn, Nebraska. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Columbia, South Carolina. Grace Lutheran, Elgin, Texas. Gethsemane Lutheran, Marion, Ohio. And St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.